Hi there, and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years, and I'm fascinated by how the companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I will be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds, and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado, to today's episode. I think you pretty much live under a stone in this country if you did not recognise the company that my guest now heads up. McGee 1866 is a fifth generation Irish family business with over 150 years experience in designing, weaving and tailoring luxurious fabrics and clothing in Donegal. It was founded on the hand-woven tweed when John McGee first established a small draper shop in Donegal, Ireland. In 1900, Robert Temple, John McGee's cousin and apprentice, bought the business, and today the third and fourth generation of the Temple family are still at the helm. Their weaving mill in Donegal town on the banks of the River Esk is still the beating heart of everything that they do at McGee. Proud to support a tradition of weaving and manufacturing textiles in the northwest of Ireland, bringing a contemporary edge to an age-old craft. They are always looking for ways to envelop heritage in new and exciting ways through contemporary design. So today, McGee 1866 lifestyle collections include men's, women's, home interior and accessories. This generation is about a sustainable future as they continue to focus on their heritage of long-lasting quality and weaving natural fibres like wool and linen, which are biodegradable and renewable. Rosie Temple began her career with commercial roles first at the international auction house Christie's and then at Rebel Kitchen, developing UK and Irish sales for the startup organic food brand before returning to the family business in 2018, taking the responsibility for sales and development, and in early 2020 was appointed a CEO. Rosie, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hope I got everything in there now.
I think that's a pretty concise summary of the last 150 odd years.
Good. As a starting point, people probably have a certain idea of what McGee is as a company, right? But a corporate, that same idea is probably quite out of date relative to where the company actually is right now. So what does the McGee 1866 business look like today relative to, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago?
Sure. No, I think that's for us, it's always been that balancing act of maintaining and having that heritage as part of our core, but making sure that we stay relevant to each decade and into the future. And I think the brand now is in this really exciting place that we've moved from being quite manufacturing orientated, and that's still kind of at the heart of what we do in the weaving mill, but that we are a direct consumer brand. We're reaching right to that end consumer, and our collections themselves, which were traditionally men's tailoring, that's still kind of an essence what we do, but that we've developed into women's, into home, into interiors and accessories, and that we have garments that we feel today's customer will feel comfortable, will feel good in, and that we are bringing that kind of modern design to our collections.
And has that involved then a significant change in how the business runs and the skill sets that you have? Like, you know, has it gone through a big metamorphosis over the last few years?
I think we've had to, you know, you look at what people are wearing today compared to photographs of streets and offices, you know, even 20 years ago. And we've had to really bring on expertise, particularly on the more kind of casual, unstructured end, but then make sure that we stay true to our roots as well with that tailoring and that woven fabric. So we have had to make changes, but balanced with what we've always done and done well and stay true to that.
And I think, I suppose, when you think about the fabrics that you're dealing with, to a large extent, there is a kind of a nationalistic element to it. And, you know, like that whole idea of tweed is so very Irish, right? And to a certain extent, then it has protected you from, you know, the risk of, you know, foreign knockoffs coming from China or Asia or things like that, because it's just not the same. And people, you know, if people want to wear tweed, they want to wear tweed. They don't want to wear something that kind of looks like tweed.
Yeah, and that's where we're in a really great place, a kind of unique position in that sort of fabric of literally Donegal tweed and the origins of that. And a number of years ago, my brother Patrick, who looks after the weaving mill, started working with the EU on a geographical protection of Donegal tweed, which is a little bit like champagne, can only come from champagne. So we hope to see that come forward in the next kind of 6 to 12 months or so. So for us, having that really unique selling point of Donegal tweed is really exciting in a sense that it marks us out and allows us to be relevant as the consumer, I suppose, looks more to provenance, to origins, to quality. And then alongside in Donegal tweed is to look at other fabrics like linens and what else we can do.
That are kind of complementary to the core.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, I suppose when you think about that and think about the company's position within the kind of the Irish entity, you know, you do have do you feel you have a big responsibility as McGee's, as kind of being the beachhead, if you will, for that clothing and that tweed industry?
Yeah, I think there is a legacy element there. And I think legacy can always be a double-edged sword in that you want to protect it, but you also want to move forward. And I always feel sort of that slight pressure in joining, that you want to keep the business moving, but you also don't want to mess things up. And it's making sure that you're not overly cautious. You've got to get out there and really go for it as well. But we're very much part of a community in the Northwest. There are a couple of other mills there. And I think what's great to see is that kind of shift towards shopping local, looking at where things come from. And that puts us in a good place.
I mentioned you had two earlier forays into the commercial world. What have either of them or both of them brought to your current role?
I think for me, I went over to London in my early 20s after going to college in York, and I'd always loved pictures. And I suppose that human expression of making a mark and working in somewhere like Christie's, it really was about the quality and the provenance and the story. You know, who was the artist? What were they painting? Who were they selling to? And you'd go down to the archives and you'd see all of that. And then it was about how that was presented. So I think for me, it was getting a sense of that luxury storytelling, sometimes for something from the past and making it relevant to today. But I did find it was quite a proper environment. And sometimes I'm not quite a rebel at heart, but I wanted to break free a little bit and then work for a startup in the food sector. And for me, that brought home the agility needed and the energy needed to bring change. And I think coming back into an older, more traditional business to bring that sense of urgency and let's make change. And yes, that can be challenging, but to have that startup mentality in an older business, I hope can be refreshing.
I've talked to people about this in the past too, and various podcasts. You know, that idea that change happens when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, right? And when you look at that and the approach, given the legacy, is the change in McGee's much more about evolution rather than revolution?
Definitely. I mean, one of my greatest fears is like stagnating. So God forbid that ever happens. So I think you've really got to bring a kind of electricity to today. You do have to be patient. You are working with a business that has that great foundation, and you want to keep what's good there. You don't want to come in and just turf it all out. So it's isolating the essence of the brand and then understanding what's needed to keep it moving forward. So I do think it is a patient evolution as opposed to complete rebel ceiling bashing and such.
Do you think you were always going to end up back in McGee?
good question. And I work with my brother, who's CEO of McGee Weaving, and my sister, who's the creative director on all things design. My dad is a fantastic mentor, and when we were teenagers, there was no expectation that we had to join the business. There was no pressure from him. And we all went off and did our own thing. And then I think there was this kind of atavistic pull. It took me a little little bit of time. I was always really conscious of any sort of nepotism. So I was like, oh, I have to go and march my own path first. And then I suppose the value of distance and that perspective gave me time to realise what a brand there was back home. So I felt ready then to come back and join. And the team, you know, we have a really, it's not just about the family, it's really about the team and the expertise and the skills that are there in Donegal and Dublin.
Talk to me then about the team, if you will, in terms of where are you on the, you know, hire or develop your own from within?
I think it is a combination of both. Okay. I think a family business, I speak for myself, there can be a tendency to not let go and to be that micromanager, and I'm always slapping myself on the wrist to stop doing that and to make sure that we develop a culture from within in that more traditional business of developing and allowing for responsibility and with that accountability, but a much kind of clearer feedback loop in the management team and how that works. And that is working with people who might have worked in the business for 20, 30, 40 years plus. And then it is also about that balance of bringing in new people from different areas who bring a different perspective and that freshness. And it's really making sure to combine those to best effect within the company.
Try to optimise the outside and the inside.
Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned working as a family, and we've had a few family businesses on, and I ask this question all the time: where does the business end and where does the business life and the personal life line be drawn?
Well, I'm really black and white on this, okay. which can cause some consternation. So if the classic line is, I'm not going to talk about work, but and then launches into, you know, the latest management accounts, I tend to actually just leave the room. I really believe that discussions at home for me don't benefit and bring about any actual action or change. For me, it's better to have it in the formal environment of the office, and also that the rest of the team don't get a sense of, oh, well, there was Rosie and Paddy having a chat over dinner, and now they've come in, and the next morning, we don't know what's happening, and we're changing off in this direction. So we really want to bring people along with us. So for me, it's very distinctive
very
lines.
Now, the other thing, of course, you have to deal with it is you're an intergenerational business, and that has its own conflicts in terms of, particularly when you have that idea of legacy and moving forward. So how do you handle the new guard versus the old guard?
My dad, he joined in the 1970s, so what, 50 years ago? And I think he joined the company when Ireland and the business was in a different place, where I think the young probably weren't given the same amount of responsibility or space to actually develop their own ideas. So I think fast forward 50 years and Dad is really open-minded and very good at allowing us to go off and figure things out with his guiding hand. So I think he's managed to really do that intergenerational step change really, really well, and to minimise any tension there, because I'm not naive, obviously there can be tensions. And I think the other thing that's really vital is that family are really open with each other. You don't want some sort of toxic undercurrent, so have a bicker about something, but move on.
Exactly. Well, you know, that applies to managements that aren't family related either, are intergenerational. If I went to McGee's now, you know, and I had a look around, what sort of sense would I get of what the culture is in McGee's?
I hope you'd get a sense that we want that friendliness and that warmth from Donegal and from being a family business, and that sense of trust. And I hope that customers feel that, and that if you're working there that is evident. And I think looking towards the future, it is about a slight shift in culture towards what we were just talking about, that more dynamic management flow between family and the rest of the company. So I think that's where we're moving to aspire more towards, but have a foundation, I hope, of a very much an open door policy, quite a flat structure, not super rigid, and that allows the company to be flexible as well.
And, you know, I suppose it is a problem for a lot of family businesses and even private businesses where, you know, there's that idea that if you want somebody on your staff to act like an owner, they have to be an owner. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if you're a publicly quoted company and you can give them stock options and things like that. But how do you instill that idea of ownership in somebody who isn't part of the family?
I think the first point for me is actually, and it sounds so simple, but is around communication and transparency and sharing a much more detailed and clearer vision of where the company is going and getting feedback on that and getting people's opinions and taking those on board. Because I think in a lot of older businesses, there can be a tendency to feel like everyone knows mm-hmm. where we're going, but it's not written down or not formally communicated. And I think over the last couple of years, we've really tried to kind of have that communication piece. And I hope that gives a sense of involvement across a wider team.
Mm-hmm. The you know, we talked about the evolution and things like that, but, you know, what's the last belief or the last essence of the company that you would give up or cast aside? Like, what is sacred to the very, very last day that you have a breath, if you will?
I think it really is that weaving mill. Right. And when you go inside the mill and you see the archive room and you see the wealth of colour and texture, and you literally kind of cloaking yourself in it, and then walking downstairs and seeing the looms at work and the team there and the breadth of their skill that they've really honed over the years, and then younger people coming in, I think that for me is why we are still in business and where we want to continue doing business, and that is at the very kind of essence of what we're doing.
And, you know, when you look at the different parts of the business, there's a natural, and I wouldn't say conflict, but you have the weaving side of it, and then you have the design side of it, and you know, the weaving side is to a certain extent artistic, but far more process driven, where the design side has to bear in mind the processes, but is far more artistic. That conflict between there, how do you manage that?
And then you have the finance piece in the middle of it. I think every clothing company is all about inventory management as well. Less exciting. But I think it is about, again, that teamwork of and remembering that when we're designing and when we're manufacturing, we want to bring those two together to make something desirable. Mm. You know, sometimes you can be sitting in front of spreadsheets or in your office, and at the end of the day, we're creating something that we want people to enjoy and to wear and to be that heirloom piece. So it's making sure that on all fronts, we don't lose sight of that. Mm. And sometimes, you know, that's when you get kind of bogged in operational detail or anything, that can sometimes happen. So it's pulling back to remember that that's what we're doing.
Mm. And who do you see as your customer then? Is your customer the retailer that you're doing it to, or is it the ultimate person that's going to wear the garment at the end of the day?
For me, it is ultimately that the customer who's going to be purchasing it, right, at the end of the day. But we have several routes to market mm-hmm. to reach that person. And it is a vertical business in the sense of our weaving mill is selling fabric around the world to global fashion companies and then incorporating it into our own collections, which are sold through independent retailers and then through our own retail channels and website. But ultimately, we're reaching the person who's interested in quality, in design, in provenance, and that they become, that the brand excites them.
Mm. One of the things, I suppose, when you have that vertical integration, that being manufacturer and ultimately the end customer as well, you have to rely on the middleman, if you will, that retailer having the same vision and passion and eye of about your product on the end customer that you have on the end customer. Now, you actually do a lot of training for retailers about your product. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's so important for us that any touch point that the consumer is coming to, whether it's shopping in an independent in Edinburgh or in Galway or purchasing from McGee1866 online, that they have a consistent experience, both in the customer service and the warmth there, but also very much on the product and that piece around making that information available both to the retailer and via our own channels as to what's this made of, what was the process behind that. So I think that education piece along that vertical chain through all of our both customer and consumer relations is really crucial.
You mentioned the online, and obviously clothing online has become a huge part of it. But when it comes to something like tweed, so much of it is tactile. So much of it is the feel of the cloth or the feel of the fabric on you. Is that where, you know, e-commerce will never ever be able to match the in-life or in-person experience?
I really think there's a place for both in terms of the bricks and mortar experience and everything you've said there, that tactile, that touch and feel. But on the other hand, the e-commerce side also offers this amazing opportunity through all of the digital innovations that we're so familiar with, through imagery, through video, that brings the brand to life in a way that we've never been able to do before. Mm-hmm. If you think back to my grandparents' era, where they had, you know, kind of print adverts and all of that side of things. But now we can get footage of, you know, that fabric going through the loom. So it may not offer the physical touch and feel, but there is an exciting recreation that can be done digitally. And so I do see that there is a place for both, and that we can be a local brand with an international reach is incredibly exciting.
Exciting, yeah. We were talking before we started about the whole area of the independent retailer and how, to a large extent, in a way, it's coming at a demise at a time when potentially the opportunity for them is even greater now because of the way people's shopping habits are changing, wanting to stay local, wanting to do things like that. How do you think the industry moves from here? You know,
I think that, you know, there have been challenges. You know, e-commerce has obviously come in, out of town shopping centres, all of those sort of areas. But as you say, I do think that we're in a place right now where that bricks and mortar independent has a real relevance to the consumer. They can provide exceptional service and a curated experience. And no matter how much digital we have, and as I said, there absolutely is a place for that, there is still that tangible shopping community experience that we as human beings, I don't think, is going away anywhere. So we do see a real place for that into the future, and that the Irish high street is in a place that can grow.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, I'm sure there's numbers somewhere on it, but I would say the loyalty level of a McGee customer is significant. Like, there's somebody who has repeatedly buys every couple of years. There's always a McGee garment in their wardrobe.
Yeah, but I think we hope that there is a sense of loyalty there. And, you know, when I'm out and about and meeting people, you do get that sense of wow, you know. Or it could be something along the lines of, oh, my father wore McGee, and no, I didn't know you did women's. And so there is that sense of rediscovery of the brand, of what we potentially were best known for, and that's still there. But now that, gosh, you've got throws, and so there's a sense of okay, this is a brand that's moving, and that rediscovery.
But do you ever, you know, when you're out in high street and walking around, things like that, and see a very young generation, a young male wearing a McGee jacket, you go, well, I never thought I'd see that.
I have to restrain myself from tapping him on the shoulder and saying, great purchase. But it is always kind of really encouraging to see that relevance intergenerational.
How important is it when, you know, as you're rolling CEO, how important is a clarity of purpose when it comes to running McGee's?
It's vital for us, and we're not about the kind of a quick buck in the next quarter. There is that sense of longevity. We don't know what's going to happen with the next generation, but that we're here to stay, and that we have a purpose on the environment and sustainability front to really look at how we can do business best, and then on a growth perspective to really increase our international presence and to keep at our core our lifestyle collections using our own fabrics. So I think having clarity of what we're sticking with and where we want to go is key, and then working with the team as to how we do that.
You raised the S word, which is the sustainability word, and obviously it's becoming more and more important in a lot of industries, and not least of all the clothing industry. I won't say it's easier for McGee, given the nature of the materials that you use, but your materials naturally lend themselves to longevity, recycling, re-upping, or whatever you want to call it, you know?
So, as you say, we have a good foundation in really championing natural fibre fabrics, and as you mentioned at the start, which are biodegradable, which are renewable. So that's a good starting point. But I think, like every industry, we know we have a lot more to do, and it can be a little bit overwhelming because we all make an impact in what we do and how we make it. And for us, it's about splitting it out into start with the site, the infrastructure. We're trying to create an energy management plan at the moment. All of that data, that measuring, what is, where are we at now and where do we need to improve to, and how much will that cost, and where can we, how can we finance that over the next couple of years? Because there's ambitious climate action goals, but there's a cost to that, and it's trying to prioritise that. And then it's moving through to the product itself, the supply chain, then to the end consumer, and looking at that circular economy, and then what is the product life cycle, and into the future, that's an area that we would love to look more at. But for right now, it's starting with that weaving mill and that sort of energy cycle there.
What's the hardest part of the job as CEO?
Oh, now you've put me on the spot there.
That's my job.
I think it's trying to make sure that there is a sense of, we talked earlier about purpose, and not losing sight of that. And for me, trying not to get kind of bogged in the day to day, and to make sure that even though it can be challenging at times, that the change is happening to actually allow that purpose to be fulfilled to its best extent. So I think it's that position of co-leading. My brother is CEO of The Weaving. This is a family business. To make sure that we're having an eye on the business, not in the business, which I understand is a common theme for many CEOs.
So do you obsess about the small things?
I try not to.
Right, but that's are you successful?
Fairly good. Fairly. That sounds very arrogant. Fairly good at not getting too into the small things and trying to keep it big picture. But others may disagree with that, with my own judgment and my own character.
Okay, well, we'll let you away with that one. Who have you, or who do you seek advice from?
So I suppose. Been very fortunate to, we work very closely with Enterprise Ireland, and through that I've really met a lot of other really inspirational Irish businesses in a multitude of sectors, from brewing to energy, all sorts, not necessarily in clothing. And I've formed a close kind of network there that I find really helpful, just to be able to talk things through. And then within the family as well, I suppose, is another great sounding board where you can be at your best and worst with family. So you can be your very, very truest self.
You know, there's an oftentimes an idea that, you know, with success comes the risk of distraction. And when you're on this evolutionary path, there's a very real chance that sometimes you go down, you know, you get money, you've got money, you decide to branch out and you branch out into the wrong area. So as you look at that growth plan for McGee's going forward, you know, how do you make sure that they're, you know, or how do you try to protect against going down the cul-de-sacs as opposed to the real growth areas?
I think for us, it can be a tricky one, because I think as a business gets older and older, there tend to be these sort of tributaries coming out of it. And you're like, wow, we're already doing far too much, with such a breadth of things. And it is actually about staying really focused on what we do best, and those principles that I've talked about using our own fabric, about that design, and really trying to stay disciplined and not getting distracted into some product that might sell very well but doesn't fit with the brand identity. So again, having that clarity of who we are and what we're about, I hope, allows us to keep on the straight and narrow and not get on some random tangent that might be good for the bottom line but doesn't fit for the overall brand.
So in that regard, and given you are the fifth generation now in this, do you see yourself as just the current steward of the company, as opposed to you know, you're really just... You're in the place now, and your job is to be put it in a better position to pass to the next generation.
I think so, but I think it would be too limiting to think of each generation just being about survival. Mm. It's about survival, but also about making sure that we make some sort of really tangible and positive impact into where the business is going. So we're not just, I hope, a placeholder for the next generation. It is about ensuring that the business is in a trajectory that allows for greater longevity.
And when you look at the industry, is it suited to a higher level of innovation?
I think, you know, the whole clothing area, there are lots of exciting things, particularly around this sustainability, that I expect we will be seeing a lot of innovation. You know, but it's a funny, opposites in the sense of there are very traditional aspects that we're not a software company. Mm. We're, you know, we have looms, they're kind of working through the day. So in that sense, it's quite traditional. But then there is huge space for innovation in terms of how we sell the product, how we photograph it, how that business model element about product life cycle, how we look towards recycling, how we do incorporate software, sizing, all of that. So I think there's this pendulum between a great sense of tradition, but that there is huge scope for always rethinking how we wear clothes and how we make them.
With that then, as you think about the growth strategy for the business going forward, I get the sense that it's really going to be organic in nature as opposed to acquisition in nature, because of the legacy and because of what you've got, you know?
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier, I think one of the words that in a family business is, yes, that sense of urgency, but also of patience. Right. And for me, it is about organic growth. And with that, it is slower. You're not going out and suddenly seeing a 200% sales increase year on year, which makes for a great headline. But it is, yeah, that organic, but making sure that it's in the right direction.
The you know, when you look at the two roles that you've left, that you've moved on from, in your own mind, how did you know it was the right time to move on to the next challenge, and then ultimately back to this challenge?
I think I was living in London at the time. I'm a big fan of the outdoors and hill running and swimming and
in London.
All that. So I felt that from a geographical point of view, it was time to come back to Ireland and have access to all of that. That's super simplistic. But that was one of the draws. And then I think it was, going back to what we were discussing earlier, for me, a sense that I had experienced other businesses, other environments, and felt ready to come back and see how those could be applied and I suppose what I could bring to the family business.
Mm. How do you keep yourself informed? You know, what do you read? What do you, you know?
I think it's about, you know, obviously reading some of the, all of the kind of media pieces and seeing what's happening on all of the social front as well, which is, as we know, a big beast of content. But it is very much about meeting with people and also going out there. You can do so much on social, but it is about going over to London or Dublin or New York and how are other people shopping? What are other brands doing? So it's very much about looking, not just about our immediate competitors perhaps, but about, wow, there's a brand that we really, really admire and seeing what they're doing and looking at how, what is the kind of best McGee version of that.
And what brands do you admire?
Oh, I think that'll be telling.
Some secrets aren't allowed, aren't allowed. Well, we've come to the last bit of the podcast, and that is the famous black book. And I open it up here to your question. And let me have a look. The one danger of this is some people's hands are writing. It's very hard to read and I get caught in the spot. Okay, but I can read this one. Right. If you had a magic wand, what would you do with it? That's your question. And we keep it in the realms of the business. So that matter, right?
I would take on the States and make Mickey 1866 part of the US wardrobe.
And why couldn't that happen?
I think in time, but I think the sort of magnitude of that market might need a little touch of a magic wand.
Right. Okay. Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Rosie Temple. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.